We're right smack in the middle of a four-week series entitled Called. We have two saved messages and we have two messages that are yet unheard. Our first message was a call on someone. And the call was on Peter, but it also was on us. And the call was this: to run into the arms of Jesus and get caught in His grace. To run into the arms of Jesus and get caught in His grace. Our tendency is to run away from Christ when we're in trouble. But the message is to run into His arms and get caught in His grace. So the word is caught. Can you say it with me? Caught. One more time. Caught. The second message last week was about being called up. We remember the four friends and the paralytic man and how they determined that they're going to do whatever it took to get this man to Jesus. And ultimately, you remember they ended up on the roof, tearing the roof apart and dropping him down there in front of Jesus. And there, maybe the sunlight was coming through, which reminds us of the word beam, which stands for by every available means. By every available means, we need to get to Jesus, just like this guy did, and experience that forgiveness. Because that forgiveness can allow us to put our past behind us and walk with Christ in freedom. Well, this is the third week. This is one of the unheard messages. And the message is to be called to something. When you're called to something, that usually means you're supposed to do something. I remember a particular job I had where I was called frequently. It was a taxi cab driver. Now, that might surprise some of you who think I have a propensity to get lost. But this happened to be in Lincoln, Nebraska. And if you know Nebraska, it's 450 miles of flat. Okay, so that's helpful. And second, it was Lincoln, Nebraska, my hometown. And third of all, this particular city, since they didn't have any bays or oceans or mountains or even foothills, they laid everything east and west and north and south, alphabetical and numerical. So even I could pretty much keep up with that. There was a challenge, though, because the person in charge when you're a taxi driver, I don't know if anybody actually been a taxi driver here? Okay, well, there's a guy known as the dispatcher, okay? And that guy is the guy that decides whether you get anybody to pick up or not. And he usually tries to apparently initiate, I found out, the newcomers by doing something like this. My car was number 46, and he would go, 46, please report to... Now, I had no idea what that meant, but apparently all the other taxi drivers who could hear our conversation knew what it meant. And so I had to call and say, this is 46, could you repeat that, please? And then he would go, all right, 46, I said, go to 3743 South Cottner. And all the other taxi drivers are laughing their heads off, right? But after a couple days, I got oriented. I got my ear tuned in. I could tell exactly what he was saying. There's no way he could mumble. He could do whatever he wanted. I could tell what he was saying. That meant I was a true taxi driver. But I did try to have a little payback, because when he would call and say, 46, what's your 20? I'd say, my 20 is sitting in time, right? And of course, in front of all the other taxi drivers, he would have to say, could you repeat that? But I didn't do that too much, because he was in charge of whether I got anybody to pick up or not. Well, the thing is, when you are called to something, you're called to something to do. And most of us have that. We have things in our life that we have to do. But as sometimes the calls get bigger and bigger and more and sometimes those calls end up being a passion for you. Sometimes those calls are things that people say, man, that's really your thing. And you start taking that call on and really getting serious about it. And if they get big enough, sometimes they even become your destiny.
Boo, give me a milk. Chocolate.
Lorraine, my density has brought me to you.
What?
Oh, what I meant to say was...
Wait a minute, don't I know you from somewhere?
Yes, yes, I'm George McFly. I'm your density. I mean, your destiny.
So today we want to talk about our density. I mean, our destiny. So Now, for some of us in here, we've been coming to church for a little while, and we've been kind of investigating who Jesus is, and maybe we're liking what we hear, and we're thinking, you know, that's what I need. I need Jesus in my life. I need to put my trust in Him. I need to have life with God. I need to have eternal life. And for those of you that are doing that today, that is your destiny. I would encourage you to go ahead and take that step and cross that line today. But for most of us today, we've already crossed that line sometime in the past. And for us, the question is, what is our destiny? And really, we all, since we're all of us that have crossed that line, are followers of Jesus. Our destiny, wouldn't it make sense that our destiny is to do what Jesus' destiny is? What Jesus' destiny was and is? And so the question is, what was Jesus' destiny? And Luke makes that fairly obvious in Luke 19:10, because Jesus makes a rather concise, uncluttered statement, and this is what it is. He says, the Son of Man, talking about Himself, has come to seek and to save the lost. It's not very complicated, is it? The Son of Man has come to seek and to save the lost. So what He's saying, His destiny was to come to earth, to seek out people that didn't know God, that were separated from God, and to rescue them, to save them, to allow them to be connected with God. So if that was Jesus' destiny, and we are Jesus' followers, then it would follow that our destiny is inextricably tied to Jesus' destiny. Our job is somehow to connect lost people with Jesus. And you say, and if we're doing that, then we are fulfilling our destiny. And wouldn't it be awesome if we go out here and we know that the things that we're doing, we have God behind us, we have God in us, we have God empowering us, fulfilling our destiny? So you say to me, Jay, that's good and that's interesting, but how do I do that? How do I fulfill my destiny? Because I don't want to get to the end of my life and look back and say, oops, I took the wrong road. Well, I'm glad you asked that. Because in Luke chapter 5, if you turn to Luke chapter 5, verse 27, we pick up where we left off last week. And in this little story of a guy named Levi, it talks about how it is we can take steps to fulfill our destiny. And so the passage starts out after this, verse 27, chapter 5. After this, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi sitting at his tax booth. Now, this type of season that we're in right now is tax season. And you probably know the expression, behold, the tax man cometh. Yes, it's coming. April 15th is coming. And most of us are not looking forward to it. How many people have your taxes done? Oh, not bad. About 10%. Okay. The rest of us is hanging over our heads. And we also don't like it when we look at our paycheck and we see the government took out a big chunk of our pay. We don't like that. And we don't really have warm fuzzies when we think of the IRS usually. But that was nothing compared to what it was back in Jesus' day. Because back in Jesus' day, the Romans owned the world. And they made sure they had their pound of flesh from everybody aged 14 to 65 around there. Everybody had to pay taxes. But that wasn't enough. There were these guys known as the tax collectors, and Levi was one of these guys. And these were guys that went and paid a special fund to the government. They paid a certain amount, and that gave them the right to a certain territory. And in that territory, they could collect taxes for anybody that was breathing. If you had to walk on that road, if you had to travel by boat, whatever, they could tax you. And especially if you had anything. Like, you remember Peter had a boatload of fish? Okay, Matthew was probably sitting there right there waiting for him when he got out. And he had to look at how many fish he had and say, okay, you owe me this much. And the thing was, he could charge whatever he wanted. Once he got his amount, then he could just keep adding it on. And because of that, nobody liked these guys. They were considered the scum of the earth. They were considered like the same as robbers. They're one and the same. The only difference between robbers is they had to hide and jump you to get your stuff, whereas these people were backed by the government. They could just say, hand it over. And so they did not like these guys at all. And they were lumped in with another group that they called the people that did the worst things, the sinners. So there's the tax collectors and the sinners. And the thing about Levi also was he was a Jew. His name, Levi, is Jewish. His dad's name was Jewish. He was a Jew. So here was this guy, you know, getting rich on the backs of his own people. He was backstabbing his own people, and he was making all kinds of money doing it. That's the guy we're talking about that Jesus approaches in this passage. And so he had just come. It says after this, what was before was Jesus had, remember, just raised, had healed the paralytic man. I raised from the dead the paralytic man last week. But he healed the paralytic man. And now he was coming out of either out of the town of Capernaum, which was his adopted hometown, or out of the house. But that's when he ran into Matthew. And probably as he was doing this, Peter and James and John were with him. And probably Peter was thinking, man, I hate this guy. He takes all of my earnings. And, you know, there's certain, I don't know if you have this, but I have certain people when I think about a certain person, I might think, well, that person is someone that actually might come to know Christ. They might come to know God. And then I think about some other people. Well, these guys, less of a chance. These guys, probably not. And don't even mess with these guys over here. There's no way any of them would accept Christ. You probably have those kind of lists in your mind. And so I'm sure in Peter's mind, when he thought about that, Jesus said, I'm going to make you fishers of men, that it wouldn't have been Matthew, wouldn't have been Levi, also known as Matthew, wouldn't have been him. But Jesus had a different reaction, because it says Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi. And when he uses the word saw there, it's not like, oh, he just glanced and saw him. It uses a Greek word that means he stopped and he looked at him intently. It stopped and he thought about him before he approached him. And I'm sure he knew Levi, because he had to go back and forth on that road all the time. I'm sure Levi knew him. He probably heard about him, the miracle man, the one that was all these teachings, the rabbis. And so I'm sure they knew about each other as well as Peter knew about Levi. And so when he stopped and he looked at him, maybe for the first time, he took a look at Levi. He probably thought, you know what? This is somebody that everybody passes by. But this is somebody that's made in the image of God. This is somebody who needs to be connected to his Maker. Everybody else might have written him off. But Jesus apparently thought, you know, this guy may have been fed up with just making more and more money and seeing how empty and how hopeless that is. He may be somebody that I can reach out to. And all that Levi was used to all the religious leaders snubbing him. And so when Jesus came up, he said, follow me to him. And Levi got up and left everything and followed him. So when Levi heard this, when he heard him, hey, I can do this in spite of all I've done. He said, I will gladly leave this life that I've invested my life in, and I will follow Jesus, someone who gave me a chance, someone who saw me for who I am. And so the first step, if you want to complete your destiny, if you want to live a destined life, is to initiate conversations with people along your pathway of life, along your regular pathway of life. How many people here have never played Monopoly? Man, okay, you guys need to go home and play Monopoly. For the rest of us, imagine that your life is a big Monopoly board. It's Monopoly board of life. And just like Monopoly, you start out and go, and you usually go through the same thing every day. You go around the space until you finally, at the end of the day, the next morning, you're back at go again. So you get up, you have breakfast, you go stop at the gas station, you stop somewhere else, you go to work, you interact with some people there, you go to lunch, interact with some people there, work again, you go home, you see some neighbors, you see your family, and it's all over and over again. It could even be the course of a week or a month. You have the same pattern all the time. It's like playing Monopoly, only in our life. A lot of times we go through that circle each day and we don't really notice. We don't really stop and see who it is that we're running into. We don't see who it is that God has put us in contact with. And it's kind of like playing Monopoly, okay? When you land on a property, when you play Monopoly, you've got a little bit of currency, right? And so you might spend it, and you might gain a property. Next time around, you might gain another one. Sometimes you might get a Monopoly. And after a while, you might start buying some houses. Ultimately, on that property, you might get some hotels. If you've got the hotels, you own that place, okay? So that's what we are called to do as followers of Jesus. As we go around our regular routine of life, it's just nothing out of the ordinary. As we go through our regular routine of life, we stop. And maybe somebody who we've never talked to, maybe the guy in the fast food store. Maybe we stop and we find out something about him. We've made a little, invested a little currency in that relationship. Maybe as time goes on, every day we get to know his name or her name. They get to know us. They get to know about our family. We get to know about our family because we're making a space all the way around our regular path of life where we're investing in people. And ultimately, you know what? When you get to know people, they start to share things. And maybe you have a chance to share something about God. And maybe they're curious about it. And ultimately, maybe you get the hotel and they accept Christ. The only way that's going to happen is if you start investing in people as you go along the course of life like Jesus did. That would be require you doing something possibly different than we normally do. How many people think that after church today, when you leave here and this week as you go around your life's Monopoly board, you can start investing in a few people that you run into? How many people think you can do that? Awesome. Okay. That will be transformational. And not only that, those things will turn into divine appointments. When you're talking to somebody, it won't just be now me talking to them. I'm part of that destiny of connecting people with Jesus. So when I talk to them, God is in that. God's working in their life. And all of these people will be divine appointments for you. You'll have the power of God working through you, speaking in you. Some of us, that's easier to speak to people than other people. I'm not that good at speaking to strangers. But if I'm following my destiny, God can use that. God can even use my fumbling conversation. So that's step one. Well, look what happened. It says that after this, Jesus went out and he saw the tax collector by the name of Levi. And he said, "Follow me." And Levi got up and left everything and followed him. So Levi left everything and followed him. The next verse, verse 29, says, "Then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with him." Okay, the next thing that happened, Levi realizes, you know what? I got accepted. God wanted to have a relationship with me. I was brought to Jesus. Jesus said, "Follow me. I'm doing it. This is awesome. I thought I would be shunned forever. And I'm on the in crowd now. I'm one of the disciples following Jesus." And so he got home to his office, and he talks to his administrative assistant. He says, "Listen, what do I have planned for tonight?" And his admin assistant says, "Well, you have 3 audits tonight." He said, "Clear my schedule. Clear my schedule." And she says, "Okay, what do you want me to do?" He says, "Go on my Facebook. Look on my Facebook. Okay? I want you to send out an invitation." "Well, what's the invitation say?" "It says I'm having a great big party. I'm having a huge party." "Well, who should I invite to this party?" "Every one of the tax collectors and the sinners, supposedly, that I hang around with, that's never had a chance to be on the inside. I want you to invite them all. All my friends, click send." But wait a minute. Before you do, you need to know 2 things. Number 1, let them know that there's free food. Number 2, let them know that Jesus is there. And so he clicks send. The invitations go out. Jesus gets one. He says, "What's this? I got an invitation to go to Levi's house." And so, and not only that, but he's going to invite all the tax collectors and his friends. And so he starts to talk to his disciples. He says, "Okay, guys, we were going to have a Bible study tonight. Okay? I was going to teach you a little bit, but we're going to scrap that." And they're going, "What do you mean you're going to scrap that? We are here. We want to be in a Bible study. It's just us." He says, "Sorry, I got an invitation from Levi." "Well, why would you want to go to do that? What's that about?" Well, you see, he has a bunch of other tax collectors that have never heard of me. And he has a bunch of other friends that have never heard of me. And so I'm going there." "Oh, you're going to do that over us?" "Yeah, because I came to seek and to save the lost." And they go, "Oh, and you're coming with me." And they go, "What? Yeah, we're coming. You're coming with me." And so he has this big, big party. And that leads us to our second point of how it is we can fulfill our destiny. And that is, you need to make space in your already busy schedule to develop relationships with people you don't know that are far from God. You need to make space in your already busy schedule to develop relationships with people you don't know that are far from God. Verse 30 says this, "But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to their sect complained to the disciples." Now, if you decide you're going to do that, That means that you're really going to do something different this week. You're going to say, you know what? I'm missing out on fulfilling my destiny. And so this week or sometime soon, I'm going to figure out a way to make a space in my schedule that I don't have, which means I'm going to have to reprioritize things. Because right now I have space for church, I have space for Bible study, I have space for this, that, but I don't have any space dedicated to making connections with people that are far from God. Now that could be different for all of us. You know, you might have a big block party. I don't know. You might join a club of something that you're interested in. You might figure out something totally new, but I'll tell you what that thing involves. It involves spending some time with some people that are far from God on a regular basis and rearranging your schedule to do that. Now, in order to do that, you may feel some pressure from the outside and from the inside. We saw that the Pharisees and the scribes that we met last week, you remember the Pharisees and the scribes last week, they were the ones that didn't think Jesus could forgive sins. Well, this is the same area. They show up over here and they want to check this out. And, you know, this banquet was not like if we have a party at our house where all the cars are parked all around everywhere. It's more like a picnic over at Shadow Cliffs. So everybody at these events, people could see what was happening. They could interact a little bit. And so these Pharisees started to put the pressure on the disciples. Sometimes you might even feel the pressure. If you decide, I'm going to arrange my schedule so that I have space for people far from God, you might actually feel some pressure from people in this church. They're saying, wait a minute. I'm not sure you want to do that. We've got everything arranged. We've got a discipleship pathway, and that doesn't fit in it. And so you might even find some resistance from people in the church to say, wait a minute, I don't know if you should be spending your time with those people. So that's one thing you might have to fight. Another thing you might have to fight is inside you. Because all of us like to be comfortable. We like to know, we like to be dealing with the known. We don't like to step out of our comfort zone, and it's a little uncomfortable to reach out to people that have a little bit different philosophy on life than we do. And sometimes we are also comfortable in having our schedule the way it is. I don't know if I'm being that clear on this, because it's hard to talk about the internal struggle to make a change that's going to fulfill your destiny. Maybe if we could just get in somebody's mind. Actually, maybe if we could come inside the mind, the cluttered mind of Jay Ashcraft. Maybe we would have excuse me. Hello.
Hey, you. Watch what you're saying down there.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
No, I think you're actually talking to yourself.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, what's this about?
Okay. It's like this. You've heard of the movie Inception, right?
Right.
Where the guy goes into his own dream?
Yeah.
Well, this is kind of the opposite. I'm your subconscious, and I'm going into your conscious world.
Well, what are you doing
and
out here?
I'll tell you what. You know what? I'm liking it out here.
What are you doing out here?
Well, it's this whole thing you've been talking to these folks about. You've been telling them to let what they hear on Sunday during the sermon affect the rest of their week.
Right.
Now, you know as well as I do that Sundays are Sundays and the rest of the week are a separate, whole separate entity. Yeah, you can't. The two do not mix. That's not going to work for us.
What do you mean?
What do I mean?
Yeah, what do you mean?
Listen, if anybody ought to understand that this is us. I mean, we work for the church.
That's
and
true.
We do church work during the week. The church is a huge part of our life. It takes over our life.
True.
And not only that, but we have our schedule to keep. I mean, Monday night is the closer.
Closer.
Right? Tuesday night. Is the good wife.
Good wife, right.
And don't even tell me you're thinking about changing Friday night. That's Blue Bloods, and that's fine.
Now, wait just a minute. You are not the boss of me, okay? So you're in my subconscious. You need to get back sub. I've had enough with you, number one. Number two. And number three, please, where'd you get this number? Do not call this number again.
Whatever.
You know, we have two things to struggle with. Sometimes there's going to be external pressure. Sometimes there's going to be internal pressure. But you have to get a little bit of momentum if you're going to complete your destiny in life. If our destiny is to connect people with Jesus, that requires that we get momentum. So we have to push past some things. And really, the opportunity, like having a party or something like that, or doing things like that, our country is ripe for that. Our country is ripe for that because, you know, studies show that people are getting more and more isolated. Studies show that before, when you had several friends, now people actually generally only have one person that they really confide their life in. And even with all the social networking that goes on, oftentimes, if you're married, the only person you really confide in is your spouse. And if that marriage goes explodes, then you got nobody and you're out there. And so we have an opportunity. That's probably why such shows like Cheers was so popular, for example, because it talks about people that can come in and connect to each other, a group of people on a regular basis. You can go where everybody knows your name. We have shows like that now also. But the sad fact is this. That studies also show that when from the time someone accepts Christ, the time someone becomes a Christian, generally they might have 20 conversations with people over the course of that year that they are connected to that don't know Christ. Or they might at least invite them to something where they might get into that kind of conversation. But as the years go on, by the eighth year, guess how many conversations people have with people that are far from God? Zero. Zero. So the sad thing is we are moving away from our destiny instead of moving toward our destiny. Therefore, it takes a special act, a special perseverance to push back away from the comfortable and toward our destiny where we know we're going to have the power of God in our lives. The scripture goes on to say in that passage we were just looking at, in my pocket, there it is. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to that sect complained to the disciples, and here's what they said. Why do you eat and drink with the tax collectors and the sinners? And what they were saying is, look, we have taken a lot of care in our religious organization to try and build fences. Because you know what? If you just let your kids out there and you don't protect them, they might follow the bad crowd. And if you're just out there and you're doing the same things as everybody else, you're connecting with those people, you might get sucked in. And so you need protections. And so that we've built fences and fences. And now look at Jesus. Why are you guys doing this? What do you think you're doing? You're going and you're mixing with people that are far from God. What are you thinking? And I'm sure the disciples, who really weren't that sure what was going on either, are sitting there, and about that time, I picture this. This is what I picture. Jesus is over here, and he kind of heard the conversation. Have you ever been like, there's a scuffle on the playground, and then the principal comes? Okay, that's the picture I get, that he comes over here. And he had just handed these Pharisees their hat last week, and so he's about to do it here again. And here's the way he does it. It says in the next section, Jesus answered them, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. It's not the healthy that need a doctor, but the sick. Now, I have went to my doctor, Dr. Nugent at Kaiser. And when I've been there, I haven't ever noticed a sign anywhere. I've looked for it. I've never noticed a sign that said, please, only healthy people have appointments here. Jesus was trying to make a statement. You guys build bridges, build fences, but those fences keep out the people that need help. They were thinking, we need to keep away the sinners. But Jesus said, look at them like sick people. Look at them as people who need a doctor. I'm the doctor. Now, I used to be an orderly for about a year, 11 to 7 shift. And this was my main tool right here. Because this was the tool I used to bring patients to the doctors, to bring patients to dinner, bring patients to the nurses, bring patients to the therapist. This was my tool, the wheelchair. And if we think about the fact that actually our job is not to be separate, but to get involved with people who need a doctor, then the wheelchair is a good symbol for a tool. And besides that, if you look out on the parking lot, you can see them on the ground there. You can see signs. You can see them in the bathrooms. Everywhere you're going to run into this week, when you see the wheelchair, I want you to think about making a connection with destiny. So can you say it with me, wheelchair? Ready? Wheelchair. One more time. Wheelchair. So I spent a lot of time in a wheelchair because the night shift, there's not that much action. And that's where I learned to do that. But Jesus goes on in the final verse of this story. And he says, I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. Okay, so our final step is this. We need to be able to see. First of all, we need to make connections intentionally along our pathway. Second of all, we need to make space in our schedule, to reprioritize our schedule so that people far from God are becoming in relationship with us. And third of all, we need to remember that by Jesus' implication there, the only people that are on his side are people that are sinners. And so we need to recognize that we too have spent time in the wheelchair. When you recognize that, when you recognize, yeah, I was one of those people, but Jesus rescued me, it motivates you. I want to close with one quick story. When I was a college student, I used to come home on vacation and I needed some money. And so I went to a place like Manpower. I found myself in the midst of a smoky room filled with people twice my age. And we were all sitting there waiting for someone to call out our name and a job that we didn't want to do. And so while I was sitting there, I would hear conversations sometimes between the guys. And one of them would say, hey, you know, because they all catch freight trains all over the place. And say, hey, you know, when you get to Kansas City, this is a good place to get some free food. It's the city mission. And another guy would say, you know, when you go to St. Louis, you can get food at, you know, the food bank. And they were talking about all these Midwestern cities where it was freezing and you could go and you could get out of the cold and you could get some food. And then this one guy who looked like his face looked like he'd seen way too many winters. He started to tell a story, and I don't know if he was making this up or what, and I don't remember exactly, but it was something like this. I know that I sat up and started listening, and so did everybody else, because he says, when you get to Chicago, because Chicago is like, you know, railway central. There's a million tracks there. When you get to Chicago, this is what you do. And he actually talked more like this. When you get to Chicago, this is what you do. But I'm not going to do that. Okay? So he said, you get off the train and he said something like this. You go about 2 miles north, and it might be midnight or something. You go 2 miles north and you get into kind of the downtown. There's some big buildings there. And when you get there, you kind of go under this one street and then you take a left at this overpass and you go down this dark alley. It's between two cities, two buildings. And you go down the dark alley, you kind of feel your way around, go by the dumpster, and there's a great big wooden door. And so you pound on the door. And everybody goes, yeah, yeah. And you pound on the door and then somebody comes and it's a big guy. He opens it a little bit and says, what do you want? And you say, Joe sent me. You got to say, Joe sent me. He says, all right. He opens the door. He says, come on. You go walking, stumbling through a dark room. And then he opens another door. He says, go on in. And he says, you walk in. So you got to picture this. I'm hearing this story with all these guys here. You walk in and it's a huge restaurant. And the lights are going, the music's going, it's full of people. And when you wash up a little bit, they set you down at a table. And it's got a napkin, a linen napkin, and it's got a tablecloth. And then you're sitting there and they start bringing you food. And they bring you like whatever you want, filet mignon. They bring lobster, they bring crab legs, they bring in all this food. And then when you've ate so much, you don't think you have anything left to eat. I mean, you have no room left. They start bringing dessert. It's cherry cheesecake. And you just keep eating until you're going to explode. And at that point, they're starting to close down because you've been there for a few hours. And so you push yourself away from the table and you walk out the front door. And he said, when you go to Chicago, that's where you go for free food. The thing is, the last thing that we need to do is to remember that the only reason that any of us got here, because Jesus sent us. And we're just one beggar telling another beggar where they can find food.